Thank you very much, Carrie. We love you and we're grateful that you're here too. It's a lovely, lovely prayer circle. I am here now for the guiding lights. And last week on the guiding lights, we read the stories of Jesus washing the feet of his disciples. And as it's worded in my Bible, Jesus predicting his betrayal. Well, when we looked at this idea that Judas betrayed Jesus, really what we looked at was the fact that betrayal is just a false belief. And that most likely, just as it says in A Course in Miracles, Jesus would not have had this perception in his mind. Certainly his disciples, once they realized what happened, they may have had this perception in their minds that Judas betrayed Jesus. But Jesus would have been unable to have that perception because he would know that in order to perceive someone as betraying you, first you have to define a specific role that that person plays in your life. You have to give them a false role, and then you have to make up rules about that role. And only if you have those two setups can you have the upset of betrayal. The other thing that we saw last week, which I really think is extremely important, is that one is the teacher of truth by being the student of truth. And in fact, we read in NTI Luke chapter 9, where it said that I may ask you to teach without a single spoken word. You know, which means you could be guided literally just to get up in the privacy of your home every day and spend 3 or 4 hours in meditation and contemplation and, you know, being very focused within, and then never say anything to anyone about it. And you, in that case, would qualify as a teacher of truth. I may ask you to teach without a single spoken word. Likewise, you could be a very famous spiritual teacher who, you know, has lots of books out that people are buying, bestsellers. You know, people could flock to your teachings as you travel around the nation or travel around the world, teaching in different locations. Hundreds of people could come to every one of your teachings. Heck, people could even be asking for your autograph. But if you are not the student within yourself, despite that appearance of teacher, you are not the teacher, right? So teaching really has nothing to do with the outer activity. Teaching has everything to do with the inner posture. In fact, I'd like to read a couple other things about this because, you know, my hope with this definition of teacher is that we would all be teachers, because my hope is that we are all students. So let me read a couple things to you from A Course in Miracles. The first thing that I'm going to read to you, and I don't know if Dev is actually here. If so, he might know this story. When I first started studying A Course in Miracles, which was back in the 90s, I gave it a pretty good shot. I tried a little bit, but I was unable to understand it, just like many other people say that was their first experience with A Course in Miracles. They're really unable to understand it. And you know, and I also found the workbook, you know, I found it at that time to be unrealistic. Like, the workbook did not accept that I had a job and I couldn't be focusing on these thoughts every half hour or every hour or whatever. So after a bit of a try, I don't know how long it lasted, maybe 3 months or so, after a bit of a try with the text and the workbook, I quit. It just wasn't working for me. But many years later, maybe 9 years later, I don't know exactly how many years later, when I had accomplished several goals in my life, and I really wasn't certain what goal to go after next. I kind of just asked myself. I wasn't intentionally asking a Holy Spirit or anything like that, but I just kind of, you know, inquired into my own mind, now what? And when I asked, now what? The memory of A Course in Miracles came back into my mind. I had put it in a drawer next to my bed all those years back when I quit it. And even though I had moved from one house to another house, it was still in that drawer next to my bed in my nightstand. So I knew right where it was, and I went and got it. And as you all know, the text is quite big. Plus, I'd already had a bad experience with the text. Remember, I'd read it and didn't understand it. And the workbook takes a whole year, and as you know, I've already had an experience with it. You know, I tried doing it and just found I couldn't be committed to it. But then in the back of the course, there's this little bitty manual for teachers. And so I thought, okay, I'll start there. I'll start with this little book and see how it goes. So I opened up A Course in Miracles, and I opened it up to the Manual for Teachers introduction. And this is what I read. The role of teaching and learning is actually reversed in the thinking of the world. The reversal is characteristic. It seems as if the teacher and the learner are separated, the teacher giving something to the learner rather than to himself. Further, the act of teaching is regarded as a special activity in which one engages only a relatively small proportion of one's time. The course, on the other hand, emphasizes, and if you could see my book, this is like quadruple underlined, these next five words. The course, on the other hand, emphasizes that to teach is to learn, so that teacher and learner are the same. It also emphasizes that teaching is a constant process. It goes on every moment of the day and continues into sleeping thoughts as well. And then the first five words of the next paragraph, to teach is to demonstrate. So I did not get past the first paragraph of the Manual for Teachers without understanding fully that this was a complete commitment. Something obviously had shifted. You know, and 9 years ago or whatever, when I had tried the course, I tried it and it didn't like it or found it too difficult, too challenging, and I quit. But this time, I just read that first paragraph, and I knew that this was a life commitment. And I made that commitment in that first paragraph. It's rather amazing. I at that time never, the thought didn't even cross my mind that I would ever have the more traditional role of teacher. You know, I had no idea that was going to come. But I understood immediately that the teacher and the student were one. And that by making this commitment to be the student, you would teach yourself everything you needed to learn. And I didn't have a lot of intellectual understanding about this. Remember, I'm kind of a, you know, kind of a spiritual virgin here. but I there was something in this that I really understood. I mean, again, I have here quadruple underlined, to teach is to learn. And it never crossed my mind that it meant this kind of teaching that I'm doing now. I fully understand that it was talking about me and myself teaching myself. I fully understood that this teach meant me committing every morning to that alone time, at this point, with A Course in Miracles prior to going off to work. This was me and me. Teacher and learner were the same. And if I would sit down and contemplate A Course in Miracles, that is the teaching, then the clarity would arise. That is the learning. So this was a one-on-one relationship. But I also understood that I couldn't just spend 2 hours or whatever in the morning in this private teaching-learning relationship and then get in my car and go off to work and forget everything from the morning. Because the other really important line here that definitely stood out to me in this very first reading, teaching is a constant process. I knew that this was a 24/7 commitment, as we say, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I knew that there was no break, that there would never be a break. You don't get a cigarette break or a coffee break from this commitment. And something in my heart said yes. And this is what I call the formal beginning of my spiritual path. Because, you know, there were certainly things that happened before this point, which led up to this point. But this was the formal decision, the formal beginning of my spiritual path. So that's what I really feel last week's message of Jesus washing the feet of the disciples. This was the interpretation that came into my mind, is that we are to have that humility of being the student and not to try and rise up and be the teacher. As we try to rise up and be the teacher, we actually step out of the true teaching role. As we very humbly within ourselves remain the student, that is how we are the teacher. So before we get started on today's reading, I am going to play a song from my iTunes list. And the song that I have selected today, it's reminiscent of the Tao Te Ching, which is one of the classes I happen to be teaching right now. This is Ruthie Foster, Love in the Middle.
Keep your own.
I want to say one more thing about what I just shared regarding that first paragraph in the introduction to the Manual for Teachers in A Course in Miracles. I said that I understood that teaching and learning was me with me, right? I just want to tell you maybe why I understood that years before, after I did not succeed in my first attempt with A Course in Miracles and I put it away. What did come to me at that time was another book. And that other book was Peace Pilgrim, Her Life and Works in Her Own Words, or Her Life and Work in Her Own Words. And what I saw from her, one of the things I saw from her in that book, is that she did not appear to have an external teacher. She had questions. Her first question was, what is God? And she says she tried asking other people, but she just knew that their answers weren't right. Their answers, I'm sure, were quite conceptual. And so she says, so she started to walk in the woods and kind of inquire, what is God? And she discovered that she could find answers within herself. And when I read that, another decision seemed to be made in my mind. And I was already seeking truth. The beginning of my search for truth, my question, what is truth, happened, you know, 4 or 5 years, or 2 or 3 years, I really don't know, before this point. So I was already seeking truth. And when I read this in Peace Pilgrim's book, the decision that was made in my mind was that if it was the truth, I would not have to learn it from the outside. That if it was the truth, I would be able to find it within. So I kind of knew then that I could learn anything artificial from the outside. But when it came to learning truth, I could only learn that within. And so I think that that prior experience from Peace Pilgrim's book, although that may have been like 9 years before, I think somehow that prior experience and that prior decision is what connected with that paragraph in A Course in Miracles and why I understood so clearly what the teaching and learning was about. And why it never crossed my mind that I might someday be teaching in this way, because I saw that as meaning literally that the inner teacher was within, and that by going within in a sincere contemplative way, this teaching learning experience would happen. So I knew that the way that the teacher arose was by first being the student. It was being the student that caused the teacher to appear, right? And in fact, later in NTI, when the call came to read the Bible and let it be interpreted through me, which resulted in NTI, there's a line in that calling that says, let me just grab it and read it specifically. Okay, it says, I'll just read the entire paragraph here. It says, those who have ears now will listen. For others, salvation will wait. There is no loss in God. Ask, and you will receive, because it will be given you. It is a gift of love, given to one who recognizes he has forgotten love, and so he asks that its remembrance be given him in grace and love. Love cannot say no to a request for love. So although this hadn't been written yet, I already somehow had that understanding that if I sat down as the sincere student and what I asked for was truth, that the teacher would arise in me and provide what I asked for. I already somehow knew, although I did not have these words, that love cannot say no to a request for love. I somehow already knew that because Peace Pilgrim was sincere in her seeking of truth, that when she walked through the woods asking herself, what is God, the reason she discovered that she could find answers within herself is because when we sincerely seek, the answers naturally arise. So, in a way, although I had never come across those words until I read that first paragraph in A Course in Miracles, in a way I had already accepted that the teacher and the student were one. And I guess one reason I'm sharing this is I feel that this blessing of somehow having this realization and accepting it so quickly has been one of the most potent parts of my spiritual path. I've never really felt like I needed much at all, if anything at all, from outside of me. I've always known that the answers, the truth lies within, and it's a matter of remaining that sincere inward seeker. And I see Carrie has put her hand up, so Carrie, the mic is yours. And hi, Carrie. I don't know if you think you have the mic or if you want the mic, but your hand is up and you don't have the mic. So I'm going to release the mic again so that you can take it if you want it. Okay, maybe Carrie's hand is up by mistake. So let's see, I'm an admin, so what I'll do is just lower the hand, and Carrie, if it was up on purpose, you can put it back up. Another thing I want to share with you is from the Tao Te Ching. I played that song, Love in the Middle, by Ruthie Foster, and I told you it reminds me of the Tao Te Ching. I want to read Chapter 8 to you from the Tao Te Ching, which also fits with this topic that we're on right now of that humility of being the student. And that this is how you are also the teacher, right? The student in you calls forth the teacher in you. Isn't that amazing? So listen to this chapter from the Tao Te Ching. The supreme good is like water, which nourishes all things without trying to. It is content with the low places that people disdain. Thus, it is like the Tao. In dwelling, live close to the ground. In thinking, keep to the simple. In conflict, be fair and generous. In governing, don't try to control. In work, do what you enjoy. In family life, be completely present. When you are content to be simply yourself and don't compare or compete, everybody will respect you. So what this particular chapter of the Tao is saying to me over and over again is to live that humble life, be that humble person. I love this particular line where it talks about the supreme good is content with low places that people disdain. You know, it also reminds me of in the Bible when Jesus talks about, you know, go into your closet and close the door and pray there. The true spiritual search is a private me with me time, or in your case, you with you time. And again, although we may come together like we are now, and that's wonderful, that's helpful, that's inspirational. In fact, this kind of goes back to my Sunday morning gathering. You know, that's preparing the ground, right, when we come together in this way. But the true spiritual cultivation happens alone. And that's the humility that Jesus was demonstrating by asking the disciples to remain the servant or the student, rather than rising up to be the teacher or the leader. And he demonstrated that by washing their feet. So let's pick up today in our reading where we left off. I may have mistakenly told you last week that we were going to be starting chapter 14 today, but we're not, because there was actually one more section left to chapter 13 that we haven't read. It's called Jesus Predicts Peter's Denial, and this is at John chapter 13, verse 31. It starts off when he was gone, and that's referring to, remember, Jesus told Judas, what you are about to do, do quickly. And so Judas left. So when it says when he was gone, it's referring to Judas. Judas has now left, and it's Jesus and the 11, if only the men were there. When he was gone, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself and will glorify him at once. My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now. Where I am going, you cannot come. A new command I give you. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Simon Peter asked him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus replied, "Where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later." Peter asked, "Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Then Jesus answered, "Will you really lay down your life for me? I tell you the truth. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." So, this is a very, very symbolic piece. Of course, most people interpret this as that Jesus was referring to the fact that, you know, very soon after this, in fact, within 24 hours after this point, Jesus' body is going to be dead and buried. In the next 24 hours of his life, as the story is traditionally told, I'm not sure if John tells the story the same way, because we're only halfway through the book of John, so we'll see what happens in the book of John. But the way it's told in the other Gospels, we would be near the end, and Jesus is going to go to Garden of Gethsemane after this meal. He's going to, you know, do his prayers in the garden, be arrested, go before Caiaphas, be condemned. They're going to take him to Pontius Pilate, and after some talk there, he will again be condemned, beaten, and then taken to the Golgotha, where he is going to be crucified, and before the sun is down on this next day, he will be buried. So, within 24 hours of speaking these words, he is going to be buried. So many people interpret this as meaning that he was predicting his death. And I don't know if you all know this, but Peter was also crucified at the end of his life. So some people think that Jesus is being very, very literal when he tells Peter, "You can't follow me now, but someday you will." It's like he's telling Peter, "You also are going to be crucified." But that is not the interpretation that shows up in my mind when I read this. In fact, the interpretation that shows up in my mind is a lot more helpful, because it doesn't only apply to the relationship between Jesus and Peter, but it applies to all of us. The interpretation that shows up in my mind is that Jesus was actually talking about the ego death. He could feel in some way that he was nearing the end of the Jesus personality, that the ego death was upon him. And when he tells Peter and the others, "You cannot follow me," that's a, in fact, he says, "You cannot follow me now, that's a statement that they are not yet ready. But he does tell Peter, but you will follow me, you know, someday. And that's also very important because that means that at some point, even if we are not ready right now, at some point we will become ready. And we will follow Jesus' example by allowing the final end of the ego. But what we're going to get to do first is we're going to get to witness Jesus as he goes through this final end. And we'll be able to learn from Jesus' example, from his demonstration, things that may be helpful when the time comes for us to go through our final end. But he's telling Peter, you're not ready yet. And he's telling all of the disciples, you're not ready yet. Because even before he was speaking directly to Peter, he said to everyone, my children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me. And just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come. So he's telling all of his disciples, as well as he's told the Jews earlier, that you are not ready for this decision that I am making now. Right? And Peter, I think, is maybe a lot like some of us, in that Peter says, I am ready. I would give my life for you, right? And of course, Peter doesn't quite understand what Jesus is telling him. Peter doesn't quite understand that Jesus is talking about the final end of the ego. But his idea is wherever you are going, you know, even if it's into physical death, you know, I will go there with you. I'm ready to give my life for you. And in fact, Peter kind of even proves this. I don't know if it's in the book of John. We'll find out when we get there. But at least in one of the Gospels, I don't know which one, Peter, when they come to arrest Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, Peter pulls out his sword. And he is ready to fight. And of course, if he's ready to fight, he is ready to die in order to protect Jesus, to keep Jesus from being arrested. And as the story goes, he even cut off the ear of one of the soldiers who came to arrest Jesus, at least in one of the Gospels. And Jesus tells Peter to put his sword away, and he heals the ear of the soldier. So Peter proves that he's ready to die a physical death to protect Jesus. So he is highly, highly committed. And yet Jesus is telling him, you are not ready. In fact, before the rooster crows in the morning, you are going to disown me 3 times. And this is important for us to hear because the truth is, many of us, if not every one of us, it's even potential that every one of us is hearing this, are like Peter. We think we are much more ready than we are. Peter was ready to die a physical death for Jesus, but he was not at all ready to die the ego death. In fact, Jesus says none of them were. And so this is another type of humility. And what's wonderful about this type of humility, realizing that we may not be as ready as we think we are, is that it keeps us as the student. And remember, when we are the student, the teacher arises. Which means that which is going to ready us, truly ready us for that point of final ego death, comes through us still seeing ourselves as the student. So, Justin, I'm not sure if I know who you are. Can you let me know in the room if you have a question directly related to to what I'm saying. Sometimes people come in the room, you do. Sometimes people come in the room, they just like to take the mic. And, you know, I like to keep things on topic. But as long as it's on topic, you may take the mic. So I'm letting go for you, Justin. Okay, good. Letting go. All right, Justin, sorry, I'm a little strict in what I perceive on topic, and although that was kind of fun, that was not on topic. So now you are red-dotted just because I was taking the mic away, taking it back. But I'm going to unred-dot you for now. But I won't be turning the mic over to you again, Justin, just to let you know. All right, so let's continue. So what Jesus is telling Peter basically is you're not as ready as you think you are. And one thing that is very interesting about this, as you all know, is, you know, we've had Elie Ruzdahl here recently telling us that as well, telling us that, you know, people, she's saying, people call me all the time. You know, they're calling her. They're calling Elie Ruzdahl because they think they're ready for the final end of the ego. That's what Elie Ruzdahl does. You know, Rick Archer called her a finisher. She helps people with that last step. So when people call Elie Ruzdahl, they're calling her because they think they're ready. And she's saying, oh, my God, they're not ready. They're not ready. All these people are calling me. They're not ready. And now her message seems to be, you're not ready. You're not ready. And, you know, some of us interpreted that as disappointing. But here we have Jesus saying the same thing to Peter and the disciples. You're not ready. And maybe it's only the ego that's disappointed. Maybe when somehow through our right mind, when we hear that message, you're not ready, what happens is an internal decision. Okay, then I will spend my time becoming ready. So Jesus is telling disciples, and most specifically Peter, you are not ready. And then he's helping Peter because Peter is so lost in his idea that he is ready to follow Jesus anywhere. He's so lost in his idea, I am ready, right? Lost in that idea that he can't see that he's being dishonest with himself. He can't see that he's lying to himself about his own readiness. And so Jesus gives him a gift that will open his eyes. Jesus says, I tell you, before the rooster crows three times tonight, you will disown me. And Peter right now is thinking, no way, no way I'm ever going to do that, right? And even later tonight, he's going to be pulling out his sword and trying to protect Jesus, right? But we all know how this story goes. And before the sun comes up in the morning, Peter does disown him three times. And this opens Peter's eyes to the realization that he was not as ready as he thought he was. And this brings on, hopefully, some humility so that he can go back and become the student again. Because Jesus did not say, this is really important for us too, right? Jesus did not say, you are not ready, you will never be ready, you are nothing like me. Jesus didn't say that stuff. He said, you're not ready, but you will be. In fact, the exact words as recorded here are, where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later. So this is not a hopeless message of, you know, I'm cool enough to be awakened, but you aren't, right? It's not that, which I think is how a lot of people heard it when Elie was speaking. A lot of people heard it as if they weren't good enough. Like there was this 1% that was ready and they were the ones that were cool enough for awakening. And then the rest of us weren't, and somehow we weren't good enough. And I even brought that up to Elie that I thought that's how people heard her. And she goes, oh, no, that's not what I said. I don't know. And that's not what Jesus is saying either. Jesus isn't saying, I'm the 1%, I'm cool, I get to awaken, and the rest of you guys, you aren't. Right? Jesus is saying, where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later. And if we hear that right, that places us back into the sincere student mode. That places us back into using our time appropriately, preparing ourselves, preparing the ground, becoming ready. And this, maybe Ellie seemed to say, that she did not think we could make ourselves ready. However, we had another teacher, Michael Langford, who seemed to say the opposite. He seemed to say the most important first step was to increase our desire for awakening. And I would call that making ourselves ready. And I would say I forgive. I mean, you know, not that I ever had any grievance against Ellie, because I didn't. But you know, something in me forgives the fact that she made that comment, kind of overlooks it, overlooks the fact that she made that comment, and listens very carefully to Michael. And what I have found within myself is that the way that I prepare myself to be ready, which is increasing that desire for awakening, the way that I do that is by being the student for 2, 3, 4 hours a day alone in meditation and contemplation. And to the absolute best of my ability, never missing a day. I can't just say never missing a day, because occasionally circumstances arise that time cannot be taken. But to keep that at the rare occasion, and not the habit. The habit is to get up and to go into my cave, which is my office with my purple sofa, and to spend that time alone before I emerge and say hello to the world. Unfortunately, my family is accepting that from me, and they know that I get up and go downstairs and that I will come out when I'm done and then be with them. So that works out well. So yeah, we have a teaching here where Jesus is saying you are not ready. And we say, okay, thank you so much for pointing that out. I think I'm going to go in the other room now and commence to getting ready. Right? Because I'm excited that I'm going to follow someday. All right, so now let's go on to chapter 14. So chapter 14 in the book of John, the very first little story that I have in my Bible is called Jesus Comforts His Disciples. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you. And I go and prepare a place for you. Oh, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going. So this is very interesting as well. I mean, he's just told them where I'm going, you cannot follow. Or at least you cannot follow now. And now he's saying, you know the way to the place I am going. This goes back to what we've already been talking about today, that as we are the sincere student seeking truth, the teacher arises within us. You see, we already know the way. We don't really need someone to teach us. We just need to be the sincere seeker. And anything we need to learn somehow that intuition will happen just right, or we'll read just the right thing in a book, or maybe we will happen to listen to a teaching and that's the perfect piece. But all of that is being orchestrated by the inner teacher. The way home is coded within. We just need to turn our attention in that direction instead of being so focused outward. We need to be the sincere seeker within rather than being the outward seeker of pleasure and achievement and et cetera, et cetera. So just like when Ellie told us, basically, you are not ready, and many people were troubled. It looks like the same thing is happening here with Jesus. He's telling his disciples, you are not ready, and they are troubled. Right? They're reacting the same way many of us did, right? The exact same way. But listen to what he says to them. He says, do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me. Now, I once knew a spiritual student who was very dedicated to taking that alone time. He took hours a day, at least 2 hours a day, every day. But there was something I noticed in him that I thought was not at all helpful. And that was that he always beat himself up for not taking more time. He was constantly self-judging himself, as no matter what effort he put forth, it was never good enough. And he was doing this in a very serious way. And what was interesting was he was putting forth more effort than me at that point. But I saw his self-judgment as a huge obstacle. And I felt that if he did not overcome his self-judgment, he probably would not awaken in this lifetime in spite of that time that he was taking. And he has passed away, and he did not awaken in this lifetime. And at the end of his lifetime, I think he was still suffering from the idea that he had not been good enough. And many of you, I know, have that same habit. I want to tell you that habit is an obstacle. Listen to what Jesus says. He says, do not let your hearts be troubled. And then he says, trust in God. Trust also in me. I will tell you what my inner attitude is when I sit down in the morning. I still feel very, very much like a beginner. I know that maybe some of you don't see me that way, but that's how I feel. I still feel very, very much like a beginner, not anywhere near a master, very much like a beginner. And when I sit down every morning, I trust whatever it is that's in me that has brought me this far to take me the rest of the way. I don't know the way. I don't know what's going to happen today when I close my eyes for meditation. I don't know anything. But something has brought me this far, and I trust that. Can you hear the difference in trusting and beating yourself up for not being good enough? And I don't know what's going to happen in this lifetime for Regina. I don't know if there's going to be an awakening here or not. I won't be so vain as to pretend like I know, because I don't. But I will tell you, I have a lot more faith in my choice to trust than I did his choice to constantly beat himself up. it seems to me that if we choose to trust, we can go further. It seems a more positive energy. So I would encourage anyone who beats themselves up as not being good enough, see if you can let go of that habit. You don't practice enough, right? You don't contemplate well enough. You don't meditate well enough. You don't forgive well enough. You don't, right, watch your mind well enough. If you're in that habit of judging yourself, I encourage you, that habit itself is probably your biggest obstacle. So I would encourage you to let go of that habit and instead just trust. You don't have to know anything. Just trust that whatever has brought you this far will bring you the rest of the way. I think that trust energy has a lot more power in it. And that's the advice that Jesus is giving to his disciples right after telling them that they aren't ready. He says, do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me. Right? He's pointing them in that direction. He's not saying, you lazy bunch of assholes, you know, I've been telling you to meditate every day. You never do. You sit around. You gossip. You're never going to make it. He's not saying that. That's what the ego says in our own heads. But Jesus is saying, where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later. Do not be troubled. Trust. Right? This is what he's saying. This is the advice we are to listen to. Do not be troubled that you are not ready yet. Trust. Can you feel the difference in that message? Trust. And then he says, in my Father's house are many rooms. And my mind hears two simultaneous interpretations to that. One interpretation, which I think is the truest interpretation, is there's room for all. No one is going to be left out. No one. And that's really important too, because there's some kind of an idea that shows up in the mind every now and then where we kind of accept that everyone else is going to awaken. But somehow there's still this thought, but not you or not me. Like individually, I will never make it. Like that thought is in the mind. And so it's very important to realize that Jesus is saying, in my Father's house there are many rooms. There is room for everyone. But another interpretation that comes to me, when I see these many rooms in my mind's eye, each room is decorated differently. They don't look the same. Each and every room is decorated in a unique way. And that's because in the way that we have developed as people, right, as ego personalities, the way that we have developed, each person is completely unique. And so the path to awakening for each of us is completely unique. As the Course says, it's highly individualized. And so another message that I hear in this, and Jesus is going to continue this message as we go on, another message that I hear in this is that you need to find your own way. And in fact, I had a private conversation with Elie Ruzdahr that I didn't know I was going to have. She invited me to have it. She said, if you're available, I've had a cancellation. Would you like to talk? You know, and I'm not a fool. So I said, yes. And so I had this conversation with her. And unfortunately, I wish I had recorded it, but I didn't think about it until halfway through the conversation. But one of the things she told me in that conversation was exactly that. You will find your own way. That is an important message too, because another thing that the mind wants to do is it wants to say, what did you do? What did you do? What did you do? As if it's going to copy someone else. We certainly can learn things from each other, and there are very important commonalities that we can share with one another, which are extremely helpful, like the awareness, watching, awareness, meditation, right? But somehow, each of our paths are going to be different, just like each of these rooms in our Father's mansion are decorated individually. And you have to find your own way. You can't trace my footsteps exactly. You'll get lost. It's not going to work for you. You have to find your own way. And that's another important message, because you know what else that says? It says the same thing the previous messages have been saying. You've got to be that student. You've got to take that time with yourself. You've got to find that inner teacher in you and let that inner teacher in you arise and begin to guide you. Because you've got to find your own way, and you will find your own way. And then in case you get scared when I say that or when Jesus says that, you've got to find your own way, right? Your way and my way are not the same. You cannot copy me. You cannot follow me. It's not going to work. Some people may feel lost. Oh, my God, I'm not ready, and I can't even, you know, follow in that person's footsteps. Oh, no, right? But Jesus continues. He says, in my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. Now, here I think when he says, if it were not so, I would have told you, he's referring to the first interpretation. There's room for everyone. If there wasn't room for you, I would have told you. You know, you will come. You will follow me, right? And then he continues. He says, I'm going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. So he's saying, I will come and take you, right? But then the very next line, he says, you know the way to the place where I am going. So when Jesus is saying, I will come and take you, he doesn't mean him specifically. He means the inner wisdom. The inner wisdom will arise for you. And that's why he also says, you know the way already. Because the inner wisdom is in you already. So how do you find your own way when you can't follow in anybody else's footsteps and copy them? You can't follow in Jesus's footsteps. You can't follow in Buddha's footsteps. You can't follow in Michael Langford's footsteps. You know, just name the person. You can't follow them exactly. There may be some commonalities, but you can't follow exactly and wake up. How the heck do you find your own way? You take that time alone as the sincere student. That's how. And in that time alone, everything you need to know will arise. And you do it every day. Every day. Every day. And step by step, you will find your way home. So that concludes our reading for today. I think I'll leave you with Jesus' words, trust in God, trust also in me, or I will just say trust. Stay with that attitude of trust. I think that's incredibly powerful. All right, have a good day.